Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Nancy Ryan. Ryan rocks it Asbury Park style. It's another Thursday, and I always am so excited to do my show. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce a fantastic artist in his own right. He is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and he's a former member of a fabulous band that I just so admire, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Mr. Ricky Bird. Welcome, Ricky.
Thanks, Nancy. How you doing today? You all right?
I'm all right. I am just fine. I'm fine other than the weather in New Jersey. You're in New York,
yeah.
So you know what it's like. It's the same. I'm just saying,
I'm thinking winter's going to be here permanently. I don't know what's going on.
I honestly don't either, especially since I left in my early 30s. I took off with guitar in one hand, suitcase in another, and I moved to San Diego. I was 15 minutes from Tijuana. I went there, and my brother Billy dropped me off. I stayed there for 28 glorious years, and I've been back in Jersey for 15 years now. But I want to get right on with, because you, I know, have so much to talk about. You know, Ricky just released this fantastic, I listened to it last night, from the very first song on your CD, you know, Clean Getaway. I was dancing in my kitchen while I was making dinner. And then I'm telling you, Ricky, every song that I listen to of yours is so unique, and it made me think of all of your music, people that influenced you to becoming the wonderful artist that you are. Every song I would go, oh my gosh, I hear the Beatles in this. Oh my gosh, I hear Bob Dylan in this one. Oh my gosh, I feel like it was so diversified. It was so wonderful. And your song, Clean Getaway, it had I sent you a message. I was just, it's just awesome. So congratulations.
Thanks. You appreciate it, darling.
And, you know, I've never heard a CD that, you know, is just geared toward recovery, addiction and recovery. And it's so on point for this time because we are in a, as you know, it's terrible. So I'm going to ask you the question and then we want to hear your story.
Sure.
Ricky, who do you think influenced you the most while you were growing up and why? And it can be in any area of your life, any music, anything.
Yeah, well, first of all, I apologize for the sound of my voice. I woke up today, considering it's still somehow winter. I woke up with a head cold, so I sound a little stuffy, but we'll have to deal with it. Who influenced me? I was always a very, I was a big reader. I mean, I still am, but when I was a kid, I love reading autobiographies, so I don't know. I kind of geared myself towards. I love comedy. I loved Jerry Lewis when I was a kid. You know, I'm an only child. You know, I used to watch Jerry Lewis movies and you know, comedy. I mean, I read stuff like. It's an interesting question because if you think about in the entertainment world, who I was influenced by, it seems. How I wound up in recovery, every single person that I loved when I was a kid, who I read about in the movies, in TV, comedians, Lenny Bruce. I mean, I read his autobiography when I was like 12, 13. The musicians that I loved, they all had issues with drugs and alcohol. It was weird. Maybe I was attracted to that sort of the dark side. I don't know what it was. But when I look back now, even... Like, I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up right off the block from Yankee Stadium. So I was a huge baseball fan, still am. Watch almost every game. Big Yankee fan.
Bless her soul. Yeah, my aunt would be so jealous. She moved. My aunt Jean loved the Yankees. She had Joe DiMaggio's photo, autograph photograph, and a photograph, I'm sorry, and a baseball. And she moved to Port St. Lucie so that she could be near them when they were training.
Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, spring training,
I
grew up in my rock and roll years really started. I grew up at a great time. I grew up as a teenager in the 70s, but when I lived in the Bronx until I was like 13, 14, in the 60s, Mickey Mantle, that was my hero, right? And not only because he was a great player, but he was born, we have the same birthday. The year I was born, 56, was his best year. He won the Triple Crown. But so I love Mickey Mantle. And when I grew up, I didn't know about his booze-hounding days, you know, when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
When I grew up and read stories about him, I mean, he died of liver cancer as a direct result from alcoholism. And
right.
I always say that his greatest home run was right at the end of his life. Excuse me, right at the end of his life when he stood at that podium and he was like, he was a mere shadow of the man he was, and he was
right
on his last legs, you know. And he said, "Don't look at me as a role model," you know. He was basically saying, you know, don't do the same things I did.
Right,
he was a
yeah.
major alcoholic, you know, and it took his life, you know. He got liver cancer from it, and to me that was so powerful. I was already in recovery when he passed away. I think it was like 95-ish or something. I remember watching it on TV and kind of sitting here by myself and tearing up because this was my hero when I was a kid in sports, and we kind
right.
of both had the same issues. Luckily, I found recovery in 87. I got clean and sober in September of 87. And to see him die like that, thank you. To see him die like that was a shame because, you know, there's so much recovery out there. You only have to admit that you have an issue and then start the journey. And there's just so much recovery. There's like 25 million people in recovery in this country. So
right.
it's a shame when somebody
right.
doesn't get it. And they pass from drugs or alcohol. It's very frustrating to somebody that's been in long-term recovery because you just want to grab them and say, "Dude, let me
wake
show
up.
You where the water
wake
is."
Up.
Well, not even wake
yeah.
up, but let me show you where
yeah.
it is, man. Let me take you to the places. You know, let me show you where recovery lives. So, you know,
right.
that was.
Well,
so, getting back to your initial question, anybody, like I said, Lenny Bruce, I love. Look, Lenny Bruce died in a famous photo on his bathroom floor with a needle in his arm. And, you know, Elvis, comedy, Lenny
right.
Bruce, right? But Richard Pryor, movie stars, even Errol
well,
Flynn. I love Errol.
Janis Joplin, so many. I mean, really.
Yeah, well, in music, once I noticed this. First of all, let me get back. Movie stars, Errol Flynn. I loved Errol Flynn. He was like a swashbuckler,
yes.
like the best-looking guy in Hollywood, right? I mean, in his
right.
50s, he was like copping drugs on Sunset Boulevard. You know, I was attracted to something. It seemed glamorous and it seemed dangerous. And now I know that it was all an illusion. And when I got into rock
exactly.
and roll, when I got into rock and roll, and basically. Back in those days, every Sunday night, everybody would gather around the big TV set on the floor in the living room, and we'd watch the Ed Sullivan Show. That's what a lot of families did. And if you don't know who Ed Sullivan is, you got to Google him. So,
I saw the Beatles. My girlfriend called.
Yeah, well, I know you know this, but there are people out there that
right.
don't. But Ed would have on, it was a variety show, so he would have on, like, comedians, he would have Broadway, cast of a Broadway show, he would have serious stuff, and he would have rock and roll. And that's where I saw the Beatles and the Stones, but he'd have Sinatra on and Dean Martin. I mean, everybody was on. But when I saw the Stones for the first time, I stared at the TV. Like, I was a very quiet, shy kid, and I was interested in music. Right from the get-go. I mean, I had a transistor radio in my ear when I was 9. And I saw something in the Stones. When I saw Keith Richards on TV, first of all, he looked like I felt. Second of all,
right.
well, second of all, for a shy kid, the girls were screaming, so that seemed like a plus. And thirdly, what I think would hit me the
That's
most
the
is...
That's a big attraction.
Yeah, a third what hit me the most is that the host, Ed Sullivan, looked completely horrified after they played. So I was like, I like that. You know, I kind of already felt that like rebel yell, you know, in my deep
right.
down in my soul. And it was almost mm-hmm. like if you didn't feel like you fit in with normal society, then you know, you wear the black hat, you know, Johnny Cash, you know, that kind of stuff. And that was really, that was the beginning of it. But then when I started to, as a teenager, I started to buy magazines, rock and roll magazines, and I'd see all of these people hanging around with beautiful women and all drinking. They always had a bottle of Jack, and everybody was having a blast.
And a cigarette.
And and a cigarette hanging, you know, between two fingers or hanging from the mouth, or actually Clapton with the cigarette. I remember we used to do this when we were in garage bands. We'd put the cigarette at the headstock of the guitar between the strings while you were playing, because we saw Clapton do it. And I was just attracted to the whole thing. And then, obviously, many years later, I realized it was an illusion, because what I figured out was, as wonderful as it looked in the movies and on TV, most of us that had real issues with drugs and alcohol always wound up in a hotel room somewhere across the world, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, with our like hearts beating out of our chest and our noses bleeding, and, you know, with bottles of Jack and all our stuff all around, and just manic behavior, and you know, that's the reality of it. You got to, if you want to dance, if you want to dance, you got to pay the band. That's the deal. So, you know, that's what it took a lot of hard lessons to find out that, yes, everybody did have fun and it looked great on paper, but the people that really had the hardcore issues, like Janis, like you said, like Jimi Hendrix, I mean, the list, Brian Jones, like, they paid the price. They paid the price. And, you know, Keith, you know how there's always an exception to the rule? That's what Keith is, an exception to the rule. Like, he's still standing, man.
It's unbelievable. Actually, that's what really proves to me that there's a God, because there's no way that, you know, we could survive without some kind of a miracle in his life or something. I don't know. It's
first of all, Keith quit dope like decades ago. That's the first thing. Second of all, I have a hunch that Keith isn't even the Keith that we remember. He's a like a wonderful, gentle, you know, funny historian, musician, and, you know, he may have a nip here and there, but I somehow feel that
he's quieted down, right?
I feel like he acts like Keith more than he is the old Keith at this point. And that's good, because I want him around I want him around another 20 years, you know?
Of course. I'm a huge fan of Mick Jagger, and I saw them live in San Diego. And it started a half an hour into the show, pouring down rain in the open stadium. And Mick Jagger did not miss, or the band, did not miss a beat. They were soaking wet because, you know, they were out. They weren't covered. And he was out and did an unbelievable show. It was incredible, actually. I couldn't believe
Mick is the consummate professional entertainer. When Mick goes on, when they know they're doing a tour, like I know they're doing some gigs in Europe this year, I think this summer. You know, Mick's in training right now, man. He's at the gym every day, and you know, his waist is probably a 29 waist or something. He's that kind of guy. He's an entertainer, and he knows that he's carrying the visual part of the show. I mean, obviously, I'm staring at Keith and Ronnie and this and that, but I'm looking at Keith's hands.
By the way, I have to say that that blues tune, still,
yeah, Clean Getaway.
Your guitar playing, because you played the lead guitar on that, correct?
Say that again.
Did you play the lead guitar on that song, Clean Getaway?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, all the guitars are
on
the record.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I wanted to clarify it before I said it. It was super awesome. And I'm into guitar because my brother, Billy Ryan, the guitar man, was asked to be with Bruce. But he was 5 years older, and he actually said, well, Bruce, I'm going to have another baby. My new business is just taking off. And he said, no. Then he went on tour with James Cotton Blues, the Jaywalkers, and they opened for all the big bands, Chicago and all of them. But then he went on tour. He was the lead guitarist with James Cotton Blues Band, and then he was one of the lead guitarists, because Clarence had two, with Clarence Clemons and the Red Bank Rockers for a year and a half. So he did his thing. But getting back to you, I want to know, Ricky, like, you must have been in several bands before you hooked up with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. So how did that happen? Like, when did you start playing, like, professionally?
Well, if you mean professionally, that means getting paid. So I guess in garage bands, when we moved from the Bronx to Queens, maybe 13, 14 years old. I mean, there's like press clippings of me at 16
wow.
years old from the Village
That's
Voice,
fabulous.
You know. I was playing at Max's Kansas City in bands and, you know, playing out in Queens, playing at, like, church dances and this, that, and the other. And I mean, I was in a garage band. But the material that
right.
I loved, I mean, as you mentioned, my influences, I was very into British rock and roll. So we're talking
mm-hmm.
about, I mean, the American stuff I was into was Otis Redding, Sam Cooke.
Right.
I mean, even as a little
of
kid,
course.
Even as a little kid, because you would hear that on AM radio. Wilson Pickett,
right.
You know, Al Green, this, that, and the other. And
awesome.
And the,
it was awesome.
Most of the blues guys, the soul guys, Muddy Waters, you know, Buddy Guy.
Right.
But as a player when I was young, I was completely over the moon for Rod Stewart and the Faces, the Jeff Beck Group,
right.
The Stones, the Kinks, you know,
right.
all kinds of stuff like that. And I wear my influences on my sleeve. You know, like I'm not trying to change the wheel. I just do. I play rock and roll, and you know, this particular record, Clean Getaway, is it's a rock and roll record. It's got a lot of different styles on it, but
right.
The message is about addiction and recovery and hope and possibilities. So with that said, I knew when I did this record that I didn't have to. It wasn't really a Bird solo record, so I could kind of jump around genres a little bit, and that's what I did. However, I wrote the song. I said, "Oh, this should be
I
like an Otis Redding kind of. This should be like an Otis Redding kind of song," and that's what Lighthouse is. And this should be like the second song on the record. The first song I covered, Kicks, Paul Revere and the Raiders, hit.
Right.
And the
right.
second song, Better Days, you know, it reminds me of kind of like a Traveling Wilburys song. I just did what I wanted to do because the message is the thing that's important on this. So I was allowed to have a little fun with it. And there's some like George Harrison-y kind of slide playing I did. I did it all on purpose. You know, I just said,
right,
hey, let
exactly.
me do some Harrison slide here. And Clean Getaway, mm-hmm. I just said, okay, I'm going to just do a blues song and kill it. And hopefully I
yeah,
did that.
Yeah,
you know?
Did. You did kill it. I think it's just absolutely
I think,
awesome.
I don't think a lot
can
of people
I put
know.
A link, like you, maybe you could send me a link. I don't know if you even want to do that, though, but we can talk about that later. I'd love to just put a link of the Clean Getaway song on when I promote the interview, but that's entirely up to you and your people, and we'll talk about that
yeah,
after.
Yeah, sure. That's
show,
fine.
But I have to get back to saying this.
What
I
would like to do would make me what would make me really happy is, you know, I got a lot of airplay. I'm getting a lot of airplay on Kicks, which that's why I did Kicks, because I knew the subject matter would be difficult to get on the radio. So I did the Paul Revere song because it was already hit, and it's like one of the first rock and roll anti-drug songs. And that Little Stevens Underground Garage played the hell out of it. Yeah, it was the coolest
That's
song
great.
In the world. First, coolest song in the world. First week in January, you know, it was in heavy rotation. And what I would love to do is there's a great station
That's
on
cool.
XM, Sirius XM called Bluesville, which used to be
right.
BB King's station. I'd love to get Clean Getaway on that. That song, Clean Getaway, on that. So I'm working on that now.
Right. Okay. Well, you have to all that information. You need to text it to me so that I can jump in and help to make that happen as well. If I can, I will, you know, if I can have any influence, I certainly would do it. Because I have to tell you, I just was thought each song, I'm like, oh, my God, this is, like, really killing it. This is especially, and, you know, all the songs to me were really great. And I could hear different artists' influences in those songs. And, of course, the subject matter was really, I was interested in that because, after all, I am a red-headed Roman Catholic that grew up in Asbury Park under my brother, Billy, who was playing music, like you, from an early age. I was exposed to that. I was the oldest girl of 7 kids, and I'm a musician as well, and have a CD out, and I had, you know, John Harrington was my lead guitarist. He was Steely Dan, and I had the honor of having Jeff Levine, who's with Hall & Oates, and was with Joe Cocker till the very end. He was his keyboard player and studio and touring player, so I have an enormous love for music, and good music, and when I hear it, I think I know it. And I'll tell you, I'm just got to say this because I forgot to. When Mick Jagger came out on that stage, I was so, like, I was so praised because, and this was years ago that I saw him. I mean, about 20 years ago. But from that first step, I mean, he has such stage presence and such charisma, and he is so damn talented. I, like, freaked out through the whole concert. I mean, somebody was behind me, this actress, and she said, oh, no, that was at a Bruce Springsteen concert because I like him too. But they go, excuse me, but, you know, could you sit down or move? Because I was just dancing, like, the whole time. Every song was a hit. So this is what I mean to say to you. Every song on your on this album, to me, every song is a hit. There wasn't one that I said, oh, I think I'll pass on this one. I mean, every single one.
Well, thank you very much.
So,
well, the deal is,
yes.
You know, first of all, speaking of Asbury Park, I tried not to, I didn't want to do a special guest kind of record, so, but there's some cool people on it. I got a couple of people, you know, I did a little stint with Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, so I got the horn, the Juke horns on there on a couple of songs, and I got Jeff Kazee, of course, on, I think he's on one song, and he played accordion on a second one, and Bobby Whitlock from Derek and the Dominoes is on Clean Getaway, actually. He's that great B3 sound on there. And the keyboard and the drummer for the whole record is Steve Holly, who played with he's out with Ian Hunter now, but he played with Paul McCartney in Wings. And the deal with these, yeah, that's a great shot. That's from the induction. The deal with these songs is these are the tunes that I kind of backtracking is I do recovery music groups in treatment facilities around the country. And I just go in with my acoustic guitar and I play these songs that are on the record,
right?
Except
right.
for kicks, because that's a little difficult to play acoustic. But and the way the record came about is people would come over to me, the clients there, the ladies and gents that are in treatment, they would come over after each group and they'd say, where can we get this record? And that went on for like a year and a half. And I finally decided to, you know, do something about it. So I did like an online music campaign. I raised the dough, and I went and I did this record. So the deal is I give the record away. Every time I go to a treatment facility, I bring like 50, 60 records, CDs, and I give it to the clinical directors, and I say to the people I play to, I said, when you complete your treatment, on your way out of here, you get a copy of the record. And then for me to be able to afford that, I'm selling the record, you know, to the general public. And there's a lot of people that might want to hear it that are not in recovery. I mean, this record is for people that are in recovery already, that it'll make you look at how far you've come. It's for people that are struggling. You may hear something that may turn your brain around and maybe send you in the right direction. And if you're just a rock and roll fan and if you're just somebody that grew up on my music, you'll love the record that way. So I'm selling it to be able to afford to give it away, so people can buy it on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon. Just put my name in there, come up, and you'll help me spread the message of recovery, man.
I know it's phenomenal what you're doing. Really, I really understood, and I give you a 100 million kudos. I did read when I was reading the inside of your cover and reading everything here. It says a nod of respect and appreciation to Stephen Van Zandt. Little Stephen is a man of few words, so he usually responds to me with a yes, no, or hey, baby, don't worry about it. So, yeah, that is very cool. And by the way, my friend Mark Ribbler, who is Little Stephen, Mark said to definitely say hello to you tonight. So
told
him that
Mark is a great guy. Mark's a great guy and a great guitar player. I did a, I kind of booked Stephen and the Disciples for this benefit I was doing in Maryland last year, and I actually played with them that night. It was like that like their second gig or something like that. And the record had just come out, and we played this show, and I played mostly acoustic that night, which was great, and I played electric on a couple of songs. I love Stephen, and I love Mark is just a seriously great guitar player, lovely guy. I've done a couple of gigs with him. Always a pleasure to play in a band with him. He's just a great guy.
Right. I've been trying to get Mark. I've known Mark for many, 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 many years from doing the open mic at the supper club in Asbury Park upstairs. And So I've been trying to get him on my radio show, and he's such a busy guy. So he goes, Nancy, don't worry. We'll hook up, you know, we'll hook up sometime. I always catch him like just before he's going out on tour, and he's a very meticulous guy about.
Yeah, you better hurry up because Steven's gearing up.
Yeah, they're gearing up, exactly. So, you know, people think radio show, oh, my God, that's a big responsibility. When, in fact, you call in, like, you find, it's easy. You know, it's 40 minutes of your time. However, I don't worry about it because I know he's going to be saying, okay, Nancy, I want to do it now, and then we'll do it. But I was going to say something
about. Yeah, you'll get him. Everything comes in time.
Oh,
let
yeah,
me just
yeah.
talk a little
no,
about.
I'm not worried
let,
about it.
Let me talk about my.
About
my nonprofit that I started, which is also called Clean Getaway. People could read about it at cleangetaway.nyc. So that's the URL for it, cleangetaway.nyc. So I put together a nonprofit because once I started doing this and I saw the response from basically the ladies and gents in treatment and the messages that I got after I played to them when they would write me and find me on Facebook and say, look, the record is really helping me with my sobriety, and I love this song. This really made me think. And I said, wow, I love this. So I'm combining rock and roll and recovery, my two favorite things. And so I put together this nonprofit. And what we're going to do is we're gearing up, actually. We're going to do some really cool things this year, probably starting in – some, maybe in the summer, but definitely in September because September is recovery month. And we're going to do kind of like town hall meetings in different communities where it'll be based around me playing songs from this record, but like I'll play a song or two that will lead into somebody in the clinic. So that will lead into somebody on the clinical side that will come in and talk about what's going on in their community. Maybe we'll have somebody from law enforcement that'll talk about what's going on. We'll talk about prevention, awareness. We'll have treatment options, like, you know, information for parents that or people that need treatment. Also information for parents that don't really know how to handle what's going on. So we're basically as a nonprofit, we're focused on like three areas. We're focused on raising public awareness and preventing substance use disorders. That's one. Two, improving access and options for treatment of substance disorders, which means anybody that needs treatment should be able to get it regardless of their insurance or, you know, whatever their issues are. So we'll focus on that. And finally, the third one is supporting recovery and reducing stigma, which is really important because I think a lot of the problems we have out there is people think – because it's drug use that, you know, oh, it's not a disease, you have a choice. And, you know, people are just misinformed. Addiction is a disease, period. You could argue with me all you want, but that's what it is. And once people – not you. The people I argue with on Facebook. Yeah, exactly. And Instagram, I'm trying to get my Instagram. I just started really getting Instagram going. So if you could come on Ricky Bird and follow my Instagram page, I post a lot of really cool pictures from when I played with Roger Daltrey and Ian Hunter and, you know, with McCartney.
Oh, good.
And this one, at this point, I've played with everybody. I got a couple of bucket list people I want to play with, but that's a whole other conversation. I mean, I'd like to do Maggie May with Rod Stewart once, and of course, I'd like to stand next to Keith Smith Richards once.
Sure.
But
let me tell you though, I got to interject something quick before I lose it. Is that I have to, those of the mayors of Asbury Park, the last two, and the current mayor, have both been on my radio show and are friends of mine. So if you need any connections in Asbury Park with the mayors, I've got them.
Well, actually, I probably do because, I mean, now we're just getting exactly our strategy together, but we want to go to different communities and put this thing together.
Like a really bad problem with drugs.
Yeah,
really.
I know. I mean, I actually talked to somebody at McClune's, and I haven't heard back yet, but I want to do some sort of, you know, benefits or some sort of awareness events. And, you know, we're just getting started, so anybody have any ideas, just find me on Facebook and we'll talk about it. But we got some good things. I was talking to the Rock Hall. I'm going in there on July 14th, and I'm going to do we're putting together some sort of a panel about opioids and you know how to find recovery and what's actually like awareness, talking to parents. There's so many things we can do on a personal level. There's actually take back programs around the country now where when you finish, you know, one of the big you can't believe the percentage of people that get hooked on prescription meds, the kids
right,
that get it
sure.
from their
parents.
That get it from their
even
parents' medicine
first,
cabinet.
Right.
That get
true,
it get it from their parents' medicine
right.
cabinet. So we have to make parents aware. Just like if you were a responsible gun owner, you would keep your gun in a lockbox, unloaded, right? So why would you keep your OxyContin or your Percodan and in your medicine cabinet where your kids can sneak around and take it? So now what they have is take back programs where you could. They're actually having one in my neighborhood in May. Where they're going to talk about stuff like that, where you could bring it to a certain place and get rid of it efficiently.
They're doing it at Walgreens already. They're doing it
right.
at Walgreens. Here
so that's really important. The other thing that's important is, you know, being a self-advocate when you go to a doctor's office, and either for yourself if you're in an older demographic or a kid, and the doctor immediately wants to give you opioids for a minor injury. And you see,
mm-hmm.
in some states, like in New York, they just passed a law where there's a ceiling on how many they can give on a prescription. Of course,
exactly.
if you need them, if you need them, you can go to a doctor and get an override. If you have a problem, nobody should be in pain. Chronic problems.
I gotta say something. They're really cracking down on opiates. When they asked me if I wanted to take Percocet for my back problems. For chronic
mm-hmm.
nerve pain that I have. I have 5 ruptured discs in my back. I go, I'm not taking Percocet. That's like, oh, my gosh, I don't think I want to do that kind of a drug because I know from I'm a 60s generation person, need I say more? I've experienced, I have had my fill of drugs and alcohol, believe me. And so.
Well, oxycodone is what's in Percodan and Percocet. So
right, exactly.
But
now I'm taking a nerve blocker, so I'm taking something that's not as addictive.
OxyContin is just
a
name of a pill that was put out by Purdue Pharmacy. So
mm-hmm.
so and what's great is well before I get onto what's great is you have to be as a parent. You have to be aware and be your own advocate. And you say to the doctor, listen, he banged his knee up in a soccer game. Is this needed? And if he says, yeah, take it. It's fine. It's safe. You might want to at least look at a different second doctor, get a second opinion before you take this as, you know, just like that. But I know in New York,
yeah.
they have now a ceiling where they can only give out X amount. If you need more
right.
because you have a chronic problem or it's a serious injury, you can get an override, right? But
yeah.
but the point is this whole opioid problem started with over prescribing
of
pain meds, and it's turned into this whole other thing because of that.
Right.
So the genie is out of
the
bottle. We got to.
Yeah.
So one of the great things, people that really need it should be able to get what they need to maintain. We're not talking about that. We're talking about. People that are being prescribed it that could be prescribed other less addictive medication, if not aspirin. You know, I mean, when I was a kid and you went for your tooth pulled, they gave you a freaking aspirin. They told you to take, you know, aspirin,
yeah.
you know, and if you banged up your back, you'd put an ice pack on it, right? But
exactly.
obviously, if it's other things more serious, then you need to take what you need to take. So let's
yeah.
before people start arguing with me. That's off the table. We're
not
talking about.
With you.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about listeners. You know, people that have chronic problems need to take what they need to take. But this issue that's out there now, this epidemic started with overprescribing of prescription drugs. So with that
right,
said,
I
know
CBD oil. I'd recommend CBD oil. Hello, folks. That's what I would recommend.
I know because I have people. You know, because I'm involved in this, they're really working on stuff that's going to be neurotransmitter kind of things that are going to be
right.
less addictive or non-addictive for
I'm
pain
doing.
Medication.
I'm doing gabapentin. I can't believe I'm saying this on live radio, but gabapentin is a pill that they give you for chronic nerve pain, and it just allows
right.
you to live a life where you're not waiting to take a half of an oxycodone so that you can have 4 hours of or 6 hours of pain-free. Like, so
right.
So anyway, I don't really want to get into that anymore because I never even tell people I have a back problem. So now the cat is out of the bag, but who cares? I mean, it's just life. And
Let me tell you another bad issue that's going on now. People of another demographic, or maybe young people too, they're going to they're taking opioids for pain, and another doctor is giving them benzos, which is like Klonopin and Xanax for anxiety. And that
there
mix is deadly. So there are laws being passed. Somebody told me there was a law passed somewhere where a doctor cannot give you both at the same time or something like that. I got to look into it. But
right, you're right.
That's something also that a parent has to be aware of. And also, if you're elderly or something, like, we're losing a lot of older people because we have chronic problems as we get older, back pain and sciatic and stuff. So you're going to one doctor and he's giving you Oxycontin or whatever he's giving you, and then you're going with another doctor. You're not telling him you're on the Oxycontin, and you also have anxiety, and he's giving you Xanax. And then at the end of the night, on top of that, because you're 70 years old and you have a glass of scotch at the end of the night. Yeah, you have a glass of scotch at the end of the night. Or a couple of glasses of wine at dinner, and then you don't wake up. So there's like a lot of – but it's about being aware and being an advocate for yourself. And that's what we're going to – we're going to go around in different communities and have professionals that talk about this and make people aware of how you can help yourself, you know, while everything's getting sussed out by the government and this and that. And then, you know, I'll be playing songs from the record. We'll have special guests, and it'll be a really cool thing. So that's what we're working on now.
Right. Well, I'm so happy. I mean, I can't believe how fast we have a few more minutes left. The time has gone so fast, and I have 10 of the best not-for-profits in the state of New Jersey I have to talk about, and 2 sponsors for my radio show. But I want to say that it's been, like I said, I love and I will help you in any and every way that I can.
Spread the word, baby. That's all. All you got to do is spread the word. If they want to see what Clean Getaway as a nonprofit's doing, go to cleangetaway.nyc. And if you want to help me spread the message with my CD so I could give them out when I do these treatment facilities, or if you just want a really great CD, you just can.
Right.
It's called Clean Getaway. You could get it on Amazon, CD Baby, iTunes,
Baby.
You know. Yeah, just get it. Just purchase it, man, and you'll love it.
It's great.
Hey, and the other thing is, talk to your local radio stations and tell them about it and tell them they need to play it and interview me. The local rock stations.
I'm going to do that for sure. And everybody do that, yeah. Well, I know so many, like I said, I'm going into 6 years in this, radio, with the radio gig of my own, and now it's my own radio show for 2.5 years. I went with this top radio, number one radio station. I was asked to go with 4 people after I just did blog solo. And this has been such a ride for me. I was just nominated for the 3rd year in a row in the category of, best TV person.
And on the other side of it, I love talking about recovery. So there you go.
Yeah, and I love talking about it too, as a matter of fact, because I come from a huge family, Irish Catholic, and I don't think I need to say much more about that. And so I love it.
Well, honestly,
you're the first person I have on to do this kind of a show, and my friends are doing a show, The City of Angels, and it is a recovery radio show. And so I'm going to have them get in touch with Shanna
get in touch with Shanna. I mean, to be real, one of the reasons why there's 2 reasons why I do this. One, I've been given the gift of recovery for 30 years plus, right? So my responsibility is to turn around and help somebody else. That's a given. Second of all, I've spoken with too many parents that have buried their kids, and it's unacceptable to me. So if I could do something to really, boots on the ground, save a couple of kids, through music, because that's the best way I know how to talk is through music. And that's why I'm doing it, that's what I'm here.
I think it's wonderful. And I absolutely also love the cover. I want to say the cover of your CD is so cool. Unfortunately, I had my little, the cursor when I took a photo and my cursor was on there, so when I promoted it, I go, that cursor, but it is pointing right up to your face in the rearview mirror. So I said, oh, that's okay, they won't mind. But I wanted to say that I saw now, that is this your brother or cousin? Or I saw a Frankie Bird did the photograph.
That's my daughter. That's my daughter.
Oh, your daughter. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So your
she took the picture. And my pal Michael DeBar, who people know from Sirius XM, Little Steven's Underground Garage, and the actor and everything else he does, he came up with the concept for me. I said, "Dude, what kind of cover do I need?" And he said, "Be in a car, man, and you know you could see your face in the rear view, and you're kind of making a clean getaway." And I'm like, "Sounds good to me."
Right. I had a phone call. I had to go over and hang up on the person, whoever it was. They'll have to call me back. Anyway, it has been such a pleasure to have you on my radio.
Thank you for the time.
It is my pleasure and my honor, and I wish you all the best with your not-for-profit, and I'm going to re-promote this. You know, this will be like probably tomorrow or over the weekend, all over the world again. So,
cool, sounds good.
You know,
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Lovely talking to you, Nancy.
I'll have everybody get in touch with Shanna and to organize shows for you or whatever, and when I see you doing things, I will just go pop up our interview. So that's what
great.
I'll do. Like once, it doesn't mean that it's over once you're on my show and the promo is finished, the interview promo is finished. It continues on for as long as I'm living. So, again, thank you so much for being on my radio show. I really appreciate
it. Thanks. Lovely
and,
talking to you, Nancy. I'll see you in Asbury Park.
I'll talk to you. Keep talking. Oh, you better. You bet your best. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay, folks, that was Nikki Bird. And what a wonderful show it was. Oh, I'm screaming now. My phone rang, and I had to go over and, like, hang up. I don't know who it was. And maybe it's – let me see if it's all – I'm done now. Well, here we go. Anyway, Ricky's still there. He's still on the line. But I have to tell everybody about my not-for-profit, and they are Mr. Tim McClune, founder of Holiday Express, Patricia Ario, artist, and she's got a new studio, and just go on her Facebook page and you can find all about where you can find Patricia and her wonderful art. Philip Richards, director. Oh, you know what? I'm going like backwards here. That was 8 and 9. I'm going to start with number one. Number one, my first not-for-profit was Minister Steve Brigham of 10th City of Lakewood. My second was Gregory and Karen Nixon, Helping Hands of New Jersey. Allison Saho, who is no longer with City of Angels. However, City of Angels is still, Recovery Radio is still in existence, and I intend on getting them hooked up with Ricky Bird, so that they can do, you know, move on with their wonderful work, helping people recovery from addictions. So, Beth Cruz, Hit the Streets for the Homeless. Michael Schwartz, Hometown Heroes. Carlos Rodriguez, Director of the Food Bank of Monmouth and Ocean Counties. Paul A. Ressler, President and CEO of TUPAC, the Overdose Prevention Agency Corporation. Then we get to Tim McClune again, who I'll just go through it again. He's the founder of Holiday Inn Express and has all of the wonderful restaurants and I love the restaurant right in Asbury Park. I love going up to the supper club and downstairs now. It's redone. It's a very nice place. They always have great entertainment. Patricia Ario, artist. And you can find her on Facebook and find out where her new studio is. Philip Richards, director of the Jersey Shore Rescue Mission. They're on Memorial Drive in Asbury Park. Nick Clemens, who I just had a show with recently. And they have a really good anti-bullying not-for-profit. So you can go on and find – actually, all of these people that I have mentioned to you are on Facebook. You can find out, you know, where you can find them in other places on the Internet, et cetera. All right. It's called bullying. Nick's not-for-profit is called Bullying. We're Kicking It. Okay. My two supporters of my radio show, who I really, really give a big thank you to, are Dr. Ina Stillman, Smiles on Broadway, and she's right in Long Branch, and it's their third office. And she has given me a beautiful smile, and I did a movie, and I was very happy to smile bright because of her wonderful work. And also Dr. David Marin, who is a chiropractor, and he is the owner of the Marin Wellness Center in Shrewsbury, New Jersey, off of Avenue of the Americas. And they also have a wonderful doctor, a physical therapy there, Dr. Raji. So I'm out of breath now. It was a terrific show tonight, and I really knew it would be. Like I said, I listened to Ricky's CD last night, and from the very first song, it's called Kicks, and it was, you know, not one of his originals, but been making my dinner. And the entire album is just really one really wonderful song after another. And his blues tune really got me, Clean Getaway, really got me. His lead guitar on this, the song is fantastic. The solo performance that he did of the lead guitar was absolutely awesome. So I texted him last night, and you know, I had to tell him like how really unbelievable. Well, he's so talented anyway. You know, he was, after all, the lead guitarist with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, but now he is doing what he was destined to do. And my phone is ringing, and I don't know who is calling me. Monmouth Medical Center. Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to say goodnight, everybody, and I'm going to answer my phone. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Take care.